On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We have breaking news from the for-profit media this evening. It's a little over a minute past 6 p.m. here on the East Coast, Eastern Daylight Time, and we have breaking news. Yes, yes, from the for-profit media, breaking news, the very first story. At the top of CNN's latest news column, spokesman Chastity Bono changing gender. Thank God for the for-profit media. Because you're plugged in, I'm plugged in, we are plugged in to the events, the earth-shattering, world-changing events that shape our lives. And that's why, on the day after another right-wing, hate-motivated terrorist attack in the United States of America, we need to know that Chastity Bono is transitioning genders. And that's why we're us, the Horn, and that's why the for-profit media does the real hard-hitting journalism. Yes, 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 it's true, it's true. Hang on to your hats. Chastity Bono, gay rights activist and child of performer Cher and the late entertainer and politician Sonny Bono, is in the early stages of transitioning from a female to a male and will be known as Chaz, his spokesman said Thursday. Jesus. No, that's not where it ends. And, you know, you can find equals. Look, a choice like that is a choice that no human being makes lightly. And I do not make light of Chastity Bono's choice. To have the wrong spirit and wrong gender mind in the wrong body that makes for a hell of an existence. I remember going back to the days of Peter Godbold's Strictly Confidential. When we all got educated on what it means to live with the wrong gender, and it leads to terrible things in one's life. So I don't make light of Chastity Bono's choice. Or actually, Chastity Bono's decision to right what nature got wrong. But damn! At the top of the latest news list? I mean, Chastity Bono changing gender got higher billing than the World Health Organization statement that swine flu is not stoppable. That would be Smithfield flu to you and I who are paying attention. I mean, really? That's stunning. And it's not just a matter of what rolls in off the wire at the... No, There are actual choices made as to positioning of stories. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. Fourth down, Air France CEO not sure sensors caused crash. And I am using CNN as sort of a poster child for purposes of illustration. But there's equal stupidity at FoxNews.com or at MSNBC.com or CNBC.com or CBSNews.com. Really? And forgive me, I have to confess to a moment of generational stupidity. When I see a post that says, who, WHO, when I see a post that says, swine flu not stoppable, who says, you know, I'm of a certain age. And the first thing that goes through my mind is, did Pete Townsend say it or did Roger Daltrey? See how bad, because we know Keith Moon didn't say it. And we know John Entwistle didn't. That leaves Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend. The WHO. But no, it's the World Health Organization. And again, even that case.
Swine flu not stoppable, who says?
What's not sure? Exactly. The problem, though, is that while it is true that the World Health Organization will, in fact, likely in the very near future, declare what we all know to be Smithfield flu to be in pandemic status. Or near it. There's a nuance problem. I mean, you do, and I know that people like Bob Lottie in the chat room understand this very well, and most of you do as well. You can have, a toenail fungus pandemic, theoretically. You can have a conjunctivitis or pink eye pandemic. Just because it's a pandemic doesn't mean that bodies are going to litter the streets. There have been a significant number of Smithfield flu cases in the world. The virus at this point has spread to 74 countries, according to the WHO, neither of which are Roger Daltrey or Pete Townsend. There are in the world 28,774 confirmed cases. But out of those 28,774 confirmed cases, 144 deaths have occurred. Now, put this side by side for the sake of perspective with the fact that just plain old flu kills thousands every year. It is the global nature of it, of the spread, that raises the pandemic flag, not the cumulative effect. In the United States, 13,217 cases have been reported and 27 deaths. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as of June 5th. There have been cases reported in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. But it doesn't necessarily harbinger that whole scenario from Monty Python and the Holy Grail with you. Bring out your dead! Whank! Bring out your dead. I'm not dead yet. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Ah, you're very ill. You will be very soon. That's not what it is. This is not the marching black death. But what is the headline from the for-profit media?
Swine flu not stoppable. Who says?
Meaning, what? If you're just, you know, if you're not a regular horn listener, for instance, if you're not someone who is plugged into and accustomed to analyzing what media mind and social manipulation in, you know, for-profit media, if you don't understand that in the for-profit media world, the age-old rubric still holds true, if it bleeds, it leads. What does that say to you?
Swine flu, not so...
Honey, will you go out in the backyard and dig graves for all the family? The who says the swine flu is not stoppable. Quick, honey, before your strength runs out and you start feeling all achy, go dig all our graves. I mean, I don't just want my corpse laying around here in the house when the apocalypse comes and nobody's here to put us in the dirt. Because that's the upshot of an irresponsible headline like that. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. 9/11. And well, thank heaven you are plugged in and tuned in and turned on. Thank heaven we have each other to make sure that the panic doesn't set in. Because I can't imagine what it would be like not to have that, not to have you. And to have to face this kind of manipulation on a daily basis without being able to have a conversation and realize, I guess we could say that we're the anti-conspiracy theory. Every time we hear one of these grand schemes, we have the common sense to step back and say, now, wait a minute. Because if you are susceptible to grand schemes, then your next step after swine flu not stoppable, who says, your next step after that is to wonder who started it.
That's right, the World Health, you know, they're part of the UN.
Which leads me to something else. You know what the Guidestones are? And most particularly the Georgia Guidestones? We gotta talk about this. Because this is the natural and logical, illogical, if you will, progression of insanity groupthink, especially when the groupthink is of the grand scheme variety. Now, the Georgia Guidestones are steeped in mystery, as it were. They're like a little mini Stonehenge on a high hilltop, to the extent that hilltops are high, in Alberta County, Georgia, having been chosen because they've got reserves of some of the most stunningly beautiful granite in the world. They were paid for by a shadowy figure operating under the pseudonym of R.C. Christian. Many suspect that stands for Rosy Cross Christian, therefore the Rosicrucians. They bear the inscription, let these be guidestones to an age of reason. And they've got some very, very simple, several different languages, many different languages, including some ancient languages, namely Babylonian cuneiform, classical Greek, Sanskrit, and Egyptian hieroglyphics. There's a list of guides, a list of suggestions. And they have the paranoid wing of paranoid America all in a frenzy, and have for years now.
This is the New World Order rubbing our face. I mean, there's just Alex. There's the Alex Jones-inspired insanity. And in fact, a few months back, somebody got a can of red spray paint and went up and spray painted all over the Georgia Guidestones. I'd love to see them, because they are astronomically aligned. There's a hole in them for viewing the North Star. The solstices are clearly delineated based on how the sun strikes the gaps in the stones on the summer and winter solstice. Not because of any magical properties, but because that's how you tell how the Earth is in the Northern Hemisphere is traversing through its year. Silly me, it works the same way in the Southern Hemisphere, only backwards. But that same crowd that is out there,
the New World Rockefellers and the Rothschilds is going to get us.
And you know what? They may be. But setting up, because, okay, never, here's what's got them in a tizzy. The first statement of the guides in Russian, Hebrew, Arabic, Hindi, Chinese, Spanish, Swahili, and the previously mentioned ancient languages, Babylonian cuneiform, Egyptian hieroglyphics, ancient Greek, and Sanskrit. The very first suggestion is, and I quote, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Now, do you think that number was chosen randomly? No, it's a number chosen based upon what the world can conceivably carry in balance. Not good enough to the weirdos in the grand scheme laden wings of the population of planet Earth. That is proof that the New World Order wants to kill 9/10 of the planet. And so some weird horse's rear end with a can of spray paint, not too distant past, went and spray painted all over the guidestones with things like, Obama is a Muslim, is spelled I-Z. Yeah, really. And F. Rockefeller and the NWO. Yeah, listen to these New World Order inspired rules. 1. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Unite humanity with a living new language. Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. I imagine the Bush family is rather upset about that one, being as how every member of their family that's ever held office has been, by definition, petty and useless. 8. Balance personal rights with social duties. 9. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite.
See there, they don't say nothing about Jesus.
And number 10. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. What's to disagree with?
See that, Bob Kincaid? He wants to kill off 9/10 of the world population, too, because he's a member of the New World Order. He's secretly a Rosicrucian Rothschild Rockefeller. He is. That's why he pretends to be so poor, so we won't know how rich he is when he sends his dark forces around to kill 9/10 of the world's population.
Oh, my aching back. But that's what happens when weak-minded or irresponsible people get hold of information for which they are not prepared to account. I mean, honest to God, you should. It's a hilltop in Georgia. Cattle are grazing not far away. Yeah, maybe it was years ago they were spray. I think the weirdos come out and spray paint them every time they get the spray paint off. If you go and look at YouTube, you'll see the focus on the maintained population at 500 million. You know, you and I, we understand the meaning of the word maintain, right? Maintain is not the same as reduce. Maintain is not the same as commit a 9/10 of the world population holocaust. Fact of the matter is, at some point, without doing anything at all, we will reduce the population of the world to 500 million through disease, through the inability to feed ourselves. And this is not grand scheme related. By the way, that's the new phrase to replace conspiracy theory. Grand scheme. The fact of the matter is, you don't need grand schemes to foresee real trouble on planet Earth. You don't need Hal Lindsey either from the religious end of things. The late great planet Earth, 1980s, countdown to Armageddon, Gog and Magog. Whew, every time I think of those three words, Gog and Magog, now I get this vision of George Bush speaking to the president of France. Did I say France? I said France. Ah, la belle France. And explaining to him that he's on a mission from God, because Gog and Magog is after the Israel. So, oh God, the embarrassment just seems never to end. And of course, being as how George Bush is the man who said early in his presidency, you know what the problem is with the French? With the French language, they don't have a word for entrepreneur. I wish I was lying. I wish that was just some cheap joke, but it's not. It's true. And you understand why it's funny. I don't have to explain it. And because he doesn't speak French, I can just hear George speaking a little more loudly. I said Gog and Magog is going to attack the Israel because it says so in the Bible. Qu'est-ce que se passe ce Gog et Magog? Sacré bleu. But yeah. But you know, none of that apocalypse. If there's any truth to that biblical-based apocalyptic the horse feathers, it lies in the fact that in every generation, there's someone out there who sees how badly human beings are doing at running the planet. You know, John, what's he called? St. John the Divine or John of Patmos, you know, got sent off to live on a rocky little island in the Mediterranean because he was just too crazy to be around civilized people. He sat and wrote the Apocalypse of St. John, otherwise known as Revelations, which the evangelical crowd just goes bananas over. because he saw the way that the civilized world, so-called, was behaving at the time. And he and what ultimately what revelations are is a tract on the non-sustainability of the world in which John of Patmos was living. The funny thing is, he was wrong. It was a sustainable world. What brought about its unsustainability was, among other things, and I will defer to our good friend Eugene Finnerman on some of this, because his sense of that period of history is much more profound than mine. It was the rise of institutionalized Christianity that led to the fall of, at least in part, of the Roman Empire. You know, I'll never forget seeing that, I forget if it was Discovery Channel or there is a volcano off of the Azores that is going to wipe us all out. Next up, an ancient Roman medical kit. Huh? But I'll never forget seeing a documentary about the discovery of an ancient Roman medical kit, a Roman military surgeon's kit. And most of his instruments, minus ornamentation, were identical to the basic surgical kit of a surgeon in 21st century industrialized, civilized, so-called world. The interesting thing being that after the rise of institutionalized Christianity, Rome fell and all of those instruments disappeared. Inside the fog of hate and fear and superstition that was Mother Church. And I mention all of this because, frankly, if there had been something like the Guidestones for Western Europe, a lot of misery might have been avoided. But then again, during those ages, with the exception of some monasteries, the ability, literacy was lost. And, you know, that little bit of advice would have been, you know, with a new living language. You'll notice that Latin is not one of the ancient languages that are inscribed on the Guidestones. You ever wonder why? Ancient Greek is. Latin isn't. Because in one form or another, ancient Greek is still alive in modern Greek. Latin, as much as I love it, is dead. But this idea that we... you know, I've been doing this show in this format since October the 17th, 2005. And every show, I do believe, with a couple of exceptions, every show has been recorded and is posted on the Internet for anyone to listen to who finds it. The only problem, there are no hard transcriptions. No nothing. And we are, in a large part, not to say that I'm the exemplar, no. I'm talking about the fragility of our transmitted knowledge. And it just ain't there. It just isn't. But something carved in stone, you know, there's a reason that's a euphemism. Well, you know, it's not like it was carved in stone or anything. When you carve something in stone, it's kind of permanent. And forgive me, I guess there is breaking, not breaking, but there's news worth talking about tonight. But this just, I just sort of got led down the garden path on this because everything seems to point at it for me. The world does need things carved in stone so that we don't screw up again when we get a chance to start over. No, I don't think the chance to start over is going to come on December the 24th, 2012, and it's going to start in Cozumel or Chichen Itza are in it. No, I don't. As our friend Eugene Finnerman has already pointed out, December 24th, 2012 has already come and gone. Just because of the screw-ups on the calendar by those benighted souls again of Mother Church. But it's good to have things carved in stone. But even though I sit here and tell you that it's good to have things carved in stone, you see stuff on YouTube. Go look up Georgia Guidestones Vandalized. First, I will give you a little background on the Georgia Guidestones. It is a Stonehenge-like monument in Georgia that states the New World Order's plan. Okay. The first thing it states is, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Man, that's just awful. Limiting the population of the Earth to 500 million will require the extermination of 9/10 of the world's people. No, it won't. The world's people will take care of the extermination of 9/10 of the world's people. Remember the sensationalistic headline from the front of the show? Swine flu unstoppable, who says? Yeah, we'll take care of that. It's like the worldwide apocalypse, the box that worldwide apocalypse comes in and it says, no Rothschilds or Rockefellers required. Just keep doing the same stupid crap you're doing, planet Earth, and you'll get that population down to 500 million or less. I mean, we know from the paleoanthropologists now that at one point in time, the entire population of planet Earth was reduced to 2,000 or less. And you and I are related to one of those 2,000 human beings clustered somewhere in, Northwest, North Central Africa. Yes, even James von Brunn, who shot up the Holocaust Museum yesterday, was related to Africans. Really? The extermination of 9/10 of the world's people. You gotta love this. Are you willing to die for the New World Order? Isn't it so much easier to believe that the New World Order's out to get you, or liberals are going to get your Bible, isn't it so much easier to believe silliness like that than to deal with the real complicated nature of human existence? To me, yes, it's rational. Let's see, F the NWO... The elite want 80% of us dead, see number one, 9/11 inside job, death to the New World Order. I tell you what, that red spray paint must have been on sale. Obama, IZ, a Muslim. Council on Foreign Relations is ran by the devil. Rockefeller sucks. Rothschild sucks. CFR scum. Death to the globalist! No North American Union. Skull and bone sucks dick. You will not succeed. Jesus will beat you, Satanist. F you, read this, Rockefeller. Which one? May I just submit, for the record, that far more than any NWO plot, National Wrestling Organization, what? Far more than that. It is It is stupidity. It is stupidity. That is terminal. We'll come back with your phone calls. Dial right in, 877-443-2366. 304-658-3333. BobKincaid@gmail.com is the email address. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Say things that nobody can understand. I want to be obscure and oblique, inscrutable and vague, so hard to pin down. I want to leave open mouth when I speak, want people to cry when I put them down. I want to be either old or young, don't like where I've ended up or where I've begun. I always feel I must get things in the can, I just can't handle it the way I am. Why am I so straight and simple? People see through me like I'm made of glass. Why can't I deepen with graying temples? Am I growing out of my class? Sirrah, sirrah, but I am such an ordinary star.
After all that talk about the who can resist a little bit of Pete Townsend? I love that Best of Pete Townsend album. I really do. Let's see what's cooking out here. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that your Alex Jones impersonation I was detecting there?
I try not to do one. Did I?
Sound like a man with all that growling. You know, that's how he sounds with that little Texas voice.
You know, I was just thinking about you.
You always say that, man. Yeah, you wasn't thinking about me.
No, you. I don't hear from somebody for a while. I figure they've gone off the radar.
No, I'm always around. You know, I told you I was, you know, working, just trying to catch up, pay bills, you know, that kind of thing. So
how's your world?
Around, you know, I've been trying to catch you a little bit. You know, you're kind of off my schedule. I like to listen to you live. I don't too much care for the rebroadcast at night.
I can dig that. I like doing it live too, frankly.
Yeah, because then if I get amped up over something, you say,
and you can't do nothing about it.
No, I'm like, oh, he just made a great point. I would love to be able to call in right now, but I can't do it. And I know I owe you some, you know, guys, some donations. So once that I catch up on some stuff, you'll have something coming your way.
Thanks, man. I do appreciate it. What brings you to the phone this evening? I didn't realize I was doing an Alex Jones. I guess because he does kind of growl a little bit, doesn't he?
Yeah. He came out really, you know, I think around 2002, he started coming to radio. You know, when everybody's paranoid just started coming up. I mean, you know, I was thinking about him because when you were doing him, I was thinking about he has this little pitch now he does with his product, and it's what he's, what is it, Crysis, crisis seats, survival gardens. I'm like, man, these are the most scared people in the world. You know, they're just.
Well, some of them are, but some of them are hustling the fear. Others really are scared. And it's the ones hustling the fear who really earn our opprobrium.
You think he's a hustler?
Oh, pure and simple. Every bit as much as Kenneth Copeland or any religion industry shill.
I think he does. Part of him does kind of believe it, though. I think part of him does. But I think he's had some success with it. So now I think he's come aware that it's a hustle.
Yeah, hey, wait, look, I'm making money at this.
Yeah. I think when he first started, he might have been passionate because, you know, some of the stuff he was doing, you know, I used to check out his little sites and stuff.
Oh, I did too, but and I followed him, about the same period of time. But there's been a morphing, if you will, toward more and more of the, over to the Jeff Rentz side of the universe.
Well, they've become what they fear. They become corporate. They got a corporate mentality now.
And that takes over, and the next thing you know, you're protecting the bottom line instead of doing your important work.
You're following what's marketable and what's working for you, and that's guiding your strategy. You know, you don't want to become that. You want to be able to just go head on, you know, with your ideals, and you know. But I think that people like that, they end up going with what's selling the most, I guess. Oh, boy. So, anyway. So, what else going on, Bob? You know, I know you're talking about other things. I mean, I was thinking about you because what happened yesterday, and I know I've been listening to you over the last, this last year or so. I know I've been detecting that you're very concerned for your own safety.
I am.
About you. I do pray for you, even though I know you have a different opinions on that.
Well, no. Don't assume that I necessarily. I reject nothing in the way of universal help. It's the institutionalized stuff that I reject wholesale. Right now, as a matter of fact, with my son, he's 13 years old, and he has entered that searching phase. You know what I'm talking about? Where the light has just gone on and he's wondering what his place is in the universe. And I don't think he liked it very well when I explained to him that his place in the universe was roughly equivalent to one gene on a chromosome strand on one cell of an armpit hair of the universe, if that big. He didn't like that. So he's entered
a... The universe is where you stand.
Yeah.
Right now. That's your place. And that's it. It ain't that deep.
It doesn't have to be, but when you're 13, everything's deep. I mean, I remember the first time I heard Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, and I thought, I thought the universe was breathing at me. But he's
don't listen to it high. You really be going.
Yeah, well, see that right. And the stereo separate. Oh man, listen to that. It's like religion. But no, he's entered that searching phase, and I understand that, and I wished him well in it. We've had a lot of conversations about it, and he wanted to go down to the little local Baptist church, and I said that's fine as long as you understand what's real and what ain't. And I said I said because when you start messing around with institutionalized religion, you can get yourself in some big trouble big fast. I said so. The only thing I said I treat this the same way I treat any dangerous substance. I would far rather that you try it with my knowledge and that we have rational conversations about it. Because I've had that conversation with all, and starting with our eldest and all the way down to the latest, I've had that conversation with our kids that when the time comes that they want to try something, and there is a line, and there's a line I won't cross, Dad, I want to try some meth. No. But when that time comes, that we will do it in a rational fashion. And that because the last thing in the world I want is for my son or daughters to be up some holler somewhere, drunker than Adam's off ox, with somebody else who's equally fried, trying to come home on roads that traverse cliffs that have 1,400-foot drops while wasted. It's and so I'm trying to be honest, but, you know, I wonder sometimes if it works.
Well, I mean, for every situation, every person, they have their path. And, you know, even though, you know, as the Bible says, you have begat your lineage, I mean, ultimately, it's still their path. It's not owed to you anything.
Oh, no, no, I can't walk it for them. I'm just trying to keep them. I'm just trying to protect them against a few, you know, thorns in their feet.
Can't do that either, really.
No, but it is in the nature of
life. Life is going to capture what it's going to capture, man. I mean, you can't, you know, you can't control that. You know, but you can have directed, I guess. But I don't know how much control that means. He'll be okay. A good tree always give good seeds, as they say. So I'm pretty sure he'll be fine. He has something admirable and something a rock solid to look at. So, you know what I mean?
I appreciate that. I hope so.
No, seriously. Yeah, I mean, seriously. I mean, may not say it. You know how it is with kids. They don't say it, whatever. But the fact of who you are and who you are, when they look back, he has to look back at you because, you know, you are his foundation. So he can't go but so far. Now, if he doesn't like you, you know, you've seen that effect. But if you're good friends with him, you guys are cool and tight. You know, there's a residue of your shadow that's going to always be on him. He's not going to, I don't know. I don't know, your son, you know.
And, you know, that residue of that shadow is perhaps one of our best manifestations of a real guide stone.
There you go. So he'll be okay.
Well, I know that you're in the D.C. area. You're the first that we've talked to since everything went down yesterday, Gary. What is it like? Are you getting a sense of any real backlash or stirrings of thought about what this means? You know, the shoot 'em up at the Holocaust Museum yesterday.
Well, I can't say I haven't been out enough to say, because, you know, D.C.'s, you know, kind of a strange place.
Well, yeah, and I'm not exactly asking you to speak for D.C. either. That's a bit presumptuous on my part.
No. I all I can say is what it does for me. And, you know, it's something that I've had to wrestle with. I'm not anti-Semitic or anything.
No.
The one thing I've always kind of, you know, and you hear sometimes with African Americans, they're like, well, you know, 6 million Jews got killed in their Holocaust, but 50 million Africans were killed in the Holocaust during slavery, you know, coming over on ships. Millions more died. So, and there's always been this little bit of an angst between Jews and, you know, some blacks about that. And I even have kind of, you know, because you always see Jews saying, hey, you know, the Holocaust. And we're like, hey, man, we went through slavery. You went through like a couple of years of some bad stuff. We went through 300 or 400 years of it. So it's like, it's always been this thing, but I think yesterday what it did, at least for me, I said, you know, I'm going to go to the Holocaust Museum on Saturday. Because, you know, that bullet kind of, you know, that bullet that went into the security guard just kind of woke me up. Said, you know what, it really doesn't matter if 6 million died, doesn't matter if 50 million Africans died. It's a crime against man. So to me now, any crime against a Jewish person, gay, or whatever, is linked to slavery and every other, you know, atrocity that hasn't happened to man. And that's really how I'm going to try to continue to look at life and never kind of get caught up in the little, you know, well, you know, our problems are worse than your problems kind of thing. And just
right, because it's not a contest. At some point in time, all of humanity has been forced to suffer by some other portion of humanity.
Exactly.
And, you know, when you get that message, you can start looking for remedies. But there is a common thread here. And if I may dare try to enunciate it, Gary, what I see out of this is that whether it is the persecution of the Jews, the persecution of persons of African extraction, the persecution of people of first peoples on this continent, be they North American, Central American, or South American.
Palestinians?
The persecution of Palestinians, the persecution, all of that comes home to the people that James von Brunn was intimately associated with, white European types.
Yeah, well, I mean, go across the board. I mean, everybody's involved. I mean, yeah, you can narrow it down to when it comes down, because I can argue that, you know, just my little studies, I won't even attempt to say I'm any kind of scholar, anything, but just my understanding a little bit of, you know, what happened with the French and Algiers and the 50s and, you know, some of the books I read about them and what defines modern terrorism. Even with some of the terrorists, they seem to have a damn good premise to why they're doing what they're doing. You know, there's always been a good premise. It just seems that sometimes that the white supremacist, it seems like it's just pure hate and fear. So it's not like somebody came and did something to them. You know what I mean? You know, like the Algiers, you know, they had a good reason. Even some of the people in Al-Qaeda, whatever you think of them, you know, America's been doing a lot of crap over there, you know, South America,
yeah,
Iran and other places. So it ain't like they ain't got a reason. They're not sitting over in caves eating sandwiches and decide, you know what, I just hate America. I mean, no, we've been stealing resources from those regions for years.
You know, look at the recent settlement by Royal Dutch Shell in Nigeria. Isn't that just another chapter, another broad-brushed example of the exploitation of native peoples by the so-called industrialized world? I mean, isn't that what that is?
CNBC had a special on, I was talking about that and a lot of stuff last night about, I think it was called Dollars in Danger, and it was talking about Africa and China and American investments in that region and just some of the exploitation. I mean, they didn't, you know, CNBC, they didn't give you that perspective totally, but, you know, if you kind of relatively have some deductive reasoning in your brain, you can figure out what's going on. They're just basically, you know, gutting the place and then just leaving.
But the thing is,
basically, but they're doing it to you. I mean, you know, basically.
Yeah, and you know, that's...
Bags to get cold, what, get...
You know, the right wing is forever fond of talking about, well, that's just another case of black-on-black crime, right? You've heard it. Well, what's Appalachia if it's not a case of mostly white-on-white crime? There's a whole lot more white-on-white crime than there is black-on-black crime or any other color on any other color crime.
Yeah, there's been a lot of white-on-white crime, man. It's just crime going on, period. It's human crime, period, man. But yeah, basically, yeah, what's happening with you guys? They're blowing up coal, and they're doing the same thing over in Africa, blowing up for, you know, cobalt, all other kind of, you know, stuff that they use to put in batteries and crap like that. You know, people living in unsafe situations. So, you know, you don't have to go to Africa. You go right to West Virginia. You know.
Well, yeah, because we look, and I know some people have a hard time getting their minds around it. But Gary, I have a closer sense of kinship with Palestinians, and with Nigerians, and with people in Malaysia who are having their forests cut down for oil extraction. I feel a closer sense of kinship with them than I do with a lot of people in my own country. Because they're doing the same thing to us. And it results in depopulation. It results in relocation. You know, the story that I just barely touched on of the lady I met on the train platform, 84 years old, lived in McDowell County, West Virginia, 84 years old, African-American lady. And the coal company came along and said, ma'am, you got to leave now. Now, granted, this is your home, and you own the ground under your home, and it's yours. You got to leave. And we're so nice, we're going to pay your moving expenses. And, you know, she looked at my wife and me and said, and you know what I did? I moved. Because there's some people, because, you know, she's 84 years old. She remembers when the white people came around and said, you got to go. And if you said no, it generally didn't end well. And her daughter was livid with anger over it. Because they hadn't even done so much as a deed. They were going to try to get, the coal company was going to try to get off on the cheap and just, well, abandoned property. And then they move in and adversely possess it, and there you go. Tell, how much difference is there between that, Gary, And what happens in, a Palestinian farm in the occupied territories where everybody just gets a knock on the door in the morning and says, get out, this is ours now.
America really is, we can, talk about the age-old bomb and all that stuff. But America in its core is basically a third world country masking itself now. Maybe there was a glimmer of hope in the 70s, maybe the 60s. There's a glimmer of hope, but basically we're a third world country. We just, we just have a circular economy system that has worked very well for us. But if you really look at us naked, from a naked point of view, you really look at America and what it actually has to offer, the most America does have to offer, I will give America this, is innovation. I mean, we are probably one of the most innovative, if not the most innovative country on earth. And that can spawn industries and stuff like that. But I'm kind of concerned now, I think when it got into this mode where, if you get too greedy too long, it'll take away everything, even innovation. And America really is just a third world country, just propping itself up in a nice blue dress. But, like you said, what's going on with you? That's third world country crap, man. I mean, come on. It's third world country.
But we got some relief today, because President Obama says that they're going to look a lot harder at the permits. And they're just going to let some Appalachians' homes be blown up. Not everybody's.
Unless you're on the radar, I don't know how much difference that'll make. I mean, not to be cynical, but, we'll see. I have a lot of questions about what's going on with the administration. Is this thing just too far gone for anybody to really, take care of? I'm not really cynical. I'm actually very hopeful. But I do think that there's a certain amount of people, with this hate stuff that's going on, all this stuff. All you need is one incident. Just one thing just happened that could set this whole thing in a whole different direction. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we see and play games with Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, them, I know where they're going. I don't listen to them, but I know where they're going, Bob. They want that incident. They want that incident so bad they can taste. They don't know how to say it because they don't want to get arrested.
Well, they know how to say it. They don't dare say it, Gary.
Yeah, they don't dare say it. Yeah. But you know that's what they're ginning up. That's what they want.
Well, look at. I mean, just as an example, the falafel man, Bill O'Reilly. And we all know what kind of credibility he has, but, there's a certain segment of the public with whom he does have credibility. On his program, last night, in regard to the shooting at the Holocaust Museum, he said the following. Now, this is an 89-year-old anti-Semite bigot. Kills an innocent guy in the Holocaust Museum, okay? Now, what about the newsworthiness of this? Is it as newsworthy as Private Long? So immediately, they got one of those that they love so much because, let's face it, it is, like you said, it is what they want. And then people like O'Reilly immediately move to disappear it. To relegate it to irrelevance.
Well, I was trying to see if Rush Limbaugh or somebody else, I didn't listen to his show because I can't listen to the sickness, but I was wondering, how they were going to obviously try to spin it. I heard some people talking about Glenn Beck and some of the stuff he was doing with it, and what other people were doing with it, trying to push it off maybe on the left and like saying they so angered people that these people now acting it out. As if it's, our fault that these people are so mad. It's like, oh, so we've angered them by our policy. Now they're going out killing people. So now, the Jews will be mad at the lefties because we're angering these people. You know what I mean? That's where they kind of been trying to spin this thing. It's like they just never, ever, ever stop. It's a shame that we have free speech in this country at times. I hate to say it.
Well, free speech, without a doubt, free speech is messy. But I draw a line, Gary, and I'm sure that there are those on the right who would say that it is an arbitrary line. I draw a line between free speech and
murder
for one, Let me see if I can use an example. I got up this morning, and I received lots of emails from folks in the anti-mountaintop removal movement. And I got up this morning, and I found an email from one of my pals. And apparently, it was what it was a response in a newspaper, in the Beckley newspaper, to a letter to the editor I had written months ago, criticizing the paper for fostering hate speech by the mountain removal right against people who are working to end it. In this particular instance, a letter was printed in the Beckley paper in which a mountain remover threatened to drag a friend of mine by the name of Bo Webb behind his truck. And this guy, you know, granted, it took him 2 months to come up with a response to me, and even so, he still couldn't get it right. Because he says, Bob Kincaid, in an April article, it was a letter to the editor, it wasn't an article, this guy's a moron, okay? You really slammed this paper for printing my article. Again, it was a letter to the editor. They didn't abandon their journalistic ethics at all and didn't take sides with me or Webb Haltom. Wow. Grammar moment, okay? It's just tough to get through, Gary. They couldn't not publish my letter, or they could have been guilty of censorship. I have a First Amendment right to this press and have the right to be heard. See, this is the failure of civics. You know, you said sometimes the First Amendment, free speech I agree, it's troublesome. But what I think is more troublesome, Gary, is the miscast impression of what the First Amendment is. Several years back, the Braves had a relief pitcher named John Rocker.
Yeah.
And he made some really nasty comments about the folks on the train between, I don't know, his hotel, on the train between his hotel and Shea Stadium or something. I don't want to sit next to some welfare queen and another one with AIDS and blah, blah, blah. And people rightly criticized him for it, and then the right wing jumped out and said, well, that's his First Amendment right, when the Braves disciplined him. Well, that was not true. The First Amendment acts as a bar to government restrictions on free speech. Free speech is restricted all the time, all over the place.
For a company, you don't have free speech, technically. I mean, in a... Like, for the Brave organization, they can do whatever they want to, because he's a part of the organization. That has nothing to do with the government. They technically doesn't have the right, well, he can say it, but they have the right to do whatever they want to do with him, in terms of they want to fire him or discipline him. Because it's like you said, that's just that the government can't come arrest you or do something like that. But, you know, he can be punished by his company or anybody else, and that's not illegal at all.
Well, sure. Consider Consider the Supreme Court case of a few years back. Not on school property, a couple of smart aleck teenagers unfurled a banner that said, "Bong hits for Jesus." Remember that?
No, I don't remember that. But.
Well, the Supreme Court said that they did not have a free speech right to do that, because the school had an anti-drug policy. Okay. Now, never mind all the stuff that you have to bring to bear in context in order to understand what "bong hits for Jesus" means. And I'm not sure, even with the understanding of the individual definitions of the words, that I understand what it means. But they were deemed not to have a First Amendment right. And the point that I'm trying to make here, although it seems rather attenuated at this point, the point that I'm trying to make here is that Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage have a First Amendment right to say what they want to say, as does any other American. You can generally, as long as you're not running afoul of other laws relating to public safety, You can stand on a street corner and scream to the top of your lungs. You know, Obama's a Muslim. He doesn't have a birth certificate. You know the usual drill. And nobody can do anything about it. But you do not. But they have been, the right wing have been so successful at redefining the First Amendment to mean things that it does not mean, so that now, if we talk about the hate speech of the right wing, well, you can't do anything about that. That's my First Amendment right. No, you do not have a First Amendment right to a massive corporate media empire. You do not have a First Amendment right to 560 radio stations. You do not have a First Amendment right to monopolize the AM airwaves of this country. And that's where the rubber meets the road for me.
No, I mean, Clear Channel and Premier Networks, I mean, all those people, major corporations, they can rein them in if they wanted to. But they obviously don't want to.
Right, and coming back to your assertion, which I think is correct, they don't want to because it's what because these killings are what they want. Because it ultimately falls perfectly within the textbook definition of terrorism. The goal of terrorism is to change public or governmental policy, behaviors, and conduct out of fear of terroristic reprisal, and terroristic meaning randomized, never know where it's going to come from, don't know when it's going to happen next, where it's going to happen, who it's going to happen to. Because, see, you got a doctor in Kansas, you got three cops in Pittsburgh, you got a security guard in D.C.
No, man, you forget, you know, it's happening so much, you're leaving out people. What about the minister?
Sure. What about the chairman of the Arkansas Democratic Party?
Didn't he have some rally books or something? Isn't that the guy who had the rally books?
The guy that went in and shot up the Unitarian congregation in Tennessee.
This is a pattern.
Yes, it is.
A pattern that has been going on ever since Barack Obama has. I mean, it's been going on for a while, but it just seemed to accelerate it ever since Obama has become elected. And the one common thread I always look at is, you listen to Sean or whoever it is, this Obama birth certificate thing, Obama is socialism, this and that. It is code language. Anybody who knows anything about code, like I was saying early during the election, when the Clintons were playing the racial codes, I said, now they're talking the same kind of code, but now it's a little broader now, because they're not just saying, okay, shoot the black man, you know, do this and that. What they're talking is fear, like socialism. They're going to turn us into this. The Mexicans, you know, you got Lou Dobbs on the Mexicans every night. They're hitting you at a couple different angles. It's almost so well done that you would almost think they're all coordinated. But what I found about hate doesn't need to be coordinated. Hate is like a very abstract thing. It's like love. You know love exists and it works and it's great and everything. It doesn't need to be coordinated. Hate doesn't either, man. It could just be like, once it's out there, it's like soldiers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's the point here. They can't. They being the hard cancerous knot of the right wing, for fear of the law now, can't come out and, as you say, you know, kill the black man. What they can do, however, is take it out on the people who they presume voted for him. And thereby, hopefully, create enough fear in this country to silence the people who were willing to stand up and speak out on behalf of things that progressively, liberally matter and can change and heal this country.
Well, that's why they keep going with this Obama birth certificate thing, because what they're saying in the code way that he's not legitimate. And since he's not legitimate, he needs to be removed from office. And then they come off with, well, the Jews not going to remove from office. You know, that's how they, I'm serious, that's how they're playing it. So therefore, in the abstract way, they're edging on, you know, these nutcases to do something else about it. You know, that's what's going on, man. Everybody knows what's going on an abstract level, but they never think that somebody, you know, they just think, well, you know, it ain't going to happen this and this and that. a bad mistake. You should never assume that. You know, hate, I'm telling you, you know how it is, man. Hate has to be stopped early. You cannot let it fester. And, you know, Democrats will sit back and be Mr. Nice Guy or whatever. It's not really my style, because if it was me, Rush Limbaugh would be shut down tomorrow, period. If I was Obama, if I was in office, if they're talking about they worry about somebody come get their guns, I'll be the guy to come get the gun. Because the bottom line is, yeah, you have something to fear with be at office. Because I'm not going to sit around and let you go around, shoot up synagogues, and scare the hell out of people. That's not the country I'm going to live in. You have to go. You know, you just have to be removed from your little lot in life, so to speak, or whatever you want to call it. And if we have to put you in a jail cell, fine. If we have to come, you know, put some, you know, a little weight on you, we have to do that. We'll do it. You know, and some people say that's a gulag. I think you can do it in a way that is not the German Third Reich. I think there's a way that this could be handled, you know, respectfully and within our constitutional rights. I think this free speech stuff, you know, is kind of going too far, like letting them just sit out there and do stuff. Because, like I said before, all you need is one incident, the whole game changes.
This is a perfect place for me to. I've been holding on to this story, and frankly, I held it past prayer meeting Wednesday. This is the perfect example of some of what you're talking about, Gary. Are you familiar with the story of this Southern Baptist preacher, former official of the Southern Baptist Convention, a guy named Wiley Drake?
I heard something about it.
Okay, he's got a radio show. Mm-hmm. And on June the 1st, on his radio show, he said, he told his listeners, and again, it's that First Amendment thing, what gives a guy a First Amendment right to have thousands of listeners who hear this hate? On his June 1st show, Wiley Drake, former Southern Baptist Convention official, said he had been praying, and this is one of those favorite words of the evangelical fundies, he said he'd been praying imprecatory prayers. Now, imprecatory is a fancy word for hate prayers against Dr. Tiller for a long time. It's basically calling on God to curse someone. And he said, and this is a quote on his radio show, he said, "I'm glad George Tiller is dead. I said to the Lord," you know, because, well, you know, "Lord, I pray back to you the Psalms, where it says they are to become widowers and their children are to become orphans and so forth." I don't think the "and so forth" part is in the Psalms. I don't think I ever caught David using it, "and so forth." "And we began calling for those imprecatory prayers because he had obviously turned his back on God again and again and again." Wow. This guy just took credit for for praying up the murder of another human being. All right? So he shows up on Fox News Radio on Alan Colmes' radio show. And Colmes asked him if he's doing any more of that imprecatory praying. And this is a transcript of what happened. He says, "Are you praying any more imprecatory prayers?" And Wiley Drake says, "The usurper that is in the White House is one, B. Hussein Obama." And Colmes just, I guess, you know, he knows he's dealing with, you know, with the loopy evangelical right, but even that's a little bit hard to, you know, kind of makes the marbles shake in your head. So Colmes asks him straight up, "Are you praying for his death?" And Drake says, "Yes." "So you're praying for the death of the President of the United States?" "Yes." And so he asks Drake then if he's worried about whether, in saying that he might be placed on a Secret Service or FBI watch list, and if he thought it was appropriate to pray or to talk that way. And Drake says, "I think it's appropriate to pray the word of God. I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying, and if that puts me on somebody's list, then I'll just have to be on their list." And Colmes then says, "You would like for the President of the United States to die?"
If he does not turn to God and does not turn his life around, I'm asking God to enforce imprecatory prayers that are throughout the scripture that would cause him death. That's correct.
Did he ask him what Obama needs repentance of? Like, did he ask him?
No, I don't think he did, because that kind of goes without saying. God hates socialists. God hates the communists. We prayed the Berlin Wall down. Hallelujah.
The issue is, because as an African American, I don't know what his background is. Race is. I would just be wondering.
He's a pasty faced, doughy old white dude.
Well, I would just be interested in understanding what it is Obama should die for. What has he done?
He supports the murder of unborn innocents.
Well, first of all, that's not true. Obama said he does not. He just said he supports the rights. He didn't say he agrees with it. I don't agree with abortion, but I believe that people make their own decision.
Right. Well, you and me, we ain't got no uteruses, so we don't have a dog in the hunt.
Yeah. So therefore, his prayer, if that's the case, is somewhat incorrect. It's a flawed prayer. Because the man has said that his personal belief is X. But being that he is and this is where it comes back to knowing religion. Even God has said you respect the laws of the governing nation, in terms of, and that the laws of God and man is,
Yeah, Paul and that's one of the few places where Paul and Jesus actually agree. Jesus says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar and unto God that which is God's. And Paul comes along and says, respect all civil authority, for all civil authority is of God. But see, that was okay for the evangelical right wing, Gary, when it was George Bush in the White House. Because then the liberals were supposed to shut up and quit. They just a hating on him. And we were supposed to shut up and go along because all civil authority derives from God, according to St. Paul.
But see, you have to spec these people out because people like that who say all these things, they're not really that. If they really support, see, I respect them. If they really, really believe what they believe in, then I can understand, okay, these guys are serious. But when they come off and they don't really know the Bible and all this other thing, then, and it's really just pure hate, and your religion really now is hate. You're not even, it's not even a question like you misinterpret the Bible or whatever. You just don't even know what the hell you were talking about.
Well, right, but the
your
problem
whole life is about something you don't even know what you're just about. You're
yeah, but
to,
you and me and the horn.
Pastor, you don't even follow the tenets of Jesus.
Yeah, we all know that. You and me and everybody listening, we all know that.
Your whole life is
rendered moot.
Yes, your whole life is moot because it's one thing if you follow it, but you don't even know what you're following. If anything, go get a Mormon Bible, go write your own, and then come back and say, well, this is what my Bible says. But don't come with me that you got some basic Christian Bible. It's just like the Islam people, they go off on the radical fringe on it. It's like, you don't even know your own, the Quran. You don't even follow.
And that's exactly what I was going to say next, is the fact that if you sit down with serious Muslim scholars, they'll tell you that the teachings of the Taliban and the teachings of whatever or the beliefs of Bin Laden and the like are invalid, apostate, heretical teachings of the Quran. So at that point when you come to that conclusion about somebody like Bin Laden, and then you see a guy like Wiley Drake out here who is a member of the single, and not just a member, Gary, but a ranking former official of the single largest Protestant denomination in the United States, the Southern Baptist Convention. At that point, when you see his conduct and you set it against the Taliban or Bin Laden, what's the difference between the two?
Well, it goes back to your point. I know you said John was high up in the mountains when he came with Revelation. But Revelation was very clear about the last days, and it seemed to be spot on. It said that the churches were being taken over by a demonic spirit, and that this demonic spirit will sit at that throne.
Does that mean you and me are going to be the ones getting raptured?
Every church. We're already raptured.
There you go.
Every church is, you can go to the Catholic, Protestant or whatever, if you really look at the core, it's been corporatized, hoarded down, to, you know, taken over by these radical people who don't even follow the tenets of their own freaking religion. So they don't know what the hell they're talking about. It ain't based on love. It's based on a certain amount of control of the human spirit, which is not, to me, any kind of a religion to even follow. So to me, you know, it's like, you know, and I understand where you're coming from. That's why I don't really, as a Christian, get upset with you when you rant on about religion, because you're actually 100% right. Now, I can make a strong argument to why God exists and why Jesus is.
And that's really not the nature of my, that's not the nature of my brief.
I know you come from, that's what I'm saying. I understand exactly where you come from. You come from where a lot of people come from. I listen to Mike Malloy. I listen to other people who talk about it. Now, there's some people who I think go off with, who seems to have an issue with God or the creator or whatever created this planet. That's their problem, because they want to question why man does all these bad things and why, you know. My thing is this. I've always felt like this way about man does, you know, I don't try to blame God for what man does. Look, let's just look at it this way, whether you believe God or not. That's the God made man, and he gave us free will. Hey, what a nice guy, you know. But some of us are going out and just doing crazy things and tearing the place. Why should I, the guy who created this stuff, be blamed, and why should I have to intervene and control? Why don't I just let these people live their lives, and maybe one day, collectively, they'll all figure it out, and it'll become one union. So that's how I kind of look at life. Any atrocity that's committed, I don't try to go around with people running, oh, the devil made me do it. They always try to blame somebody else. Devil didn't make you do it. You did it. You did it. Take responsibility for what you did, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if the devil made that, if the devil made you do it, then that means you're the devil.
Hey, I never thought of that way. That's a good one. I'm going to keep that in my pocket next time.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, let me let you go. I know you got like 400 callers.
So. Gary, I was not pulling your leg. I was thinking of you not a couple of days ago, and it really does operate that way. And I'm just glad to know that you're out there, that you're all right, and we got a chance to hear from you this evening.
Yeah, same to you. Every time something happens, when you crazy ship, I think about you. I throw a little prayer for you, put a little covenant of protection around you. But,
well, see, that's what prayer is supposed to be doing. You know, this imprecatory. I got to do some research and find out who came up with this imprecatory
prayer.
Heard
it. You know, I learned something tonight. This imprecatory. I mean, I know about David praying the curses and all that, but I didn't know these guys. It's funny. It's funny. They don't know that much about the actual Bible, but they do come up with some good angles when it comes to hate.
Well,
you know,
yeah, as
little crook and cranny on that, but then they get down to the tenets of love. They don't even know the basic principles.
Yeah, just look it up. It's imprecatory prayer, imprecatory prayer. You will be horrified, Gary. I promise.
Google it now.
All right, we'll talk to you later, my friend.
All right, God bless.
You too. Bye-bye. Always good to hear from a member of the Horn family that we haven't heard from for a while. I hear thunder outside. Of course, I've been hearing thunder all day. But you know that sometimes that doesn't mean good things here for the Horn Studio. If for any reason we get whacked, I will let you know before all the lights go out. But, you know, cross your fingers and pray some imprecatory prayer against the thunder! Oh, dear. Yeah. Let's see. Hopefully... Oh, darn it. Okay, we'll... Nope. You guys got to have a little more patience. I know. I know it's frustrating. Sometimes phones die and things like that. But, you know, ring back in. And so I'm glad. And, okay, this is one of those spooky moments. Because I've been hanging on to the story of Wiley Drake for a few days now. And in a way, part of the fun of all this is that when I can't find an automatically comfortable place for a story to happen, to bring it to you, I know that one way or another, at some point in time, that door will open because of the way you think and the way I think and the way we think together. That someone will open the door and make the story of a Wiley Drake more relevant than it was in the first place. And with that in mind, I want to thank Gary for dialing in just at the right time. And just a little footnote. In the course of my conversation with Gary, I mentioned the fact that white folks have been making trouble for the planet for an awful long time. And I will go so far as to say that it goes back beyond any concept of so-called Western Europe. Some of the earliest evidence we have of white folks making trouble on the planet don't happen in Europe. Or they start in Europe, but they're actually more like Central Asia. And that is the... And, oh man, this is a loaded word. But they really were who they were. And that's the Aryan invasion of the Indian subcontinent. There was a pre-existing brilliant civilization at places like Mohenjo-Daro in the Indus River Valley. And the white Aryans, with their vengeful sky god, came boiling down across the Caucasus Mountains, Caucasians, and into the river plains of the Indian subcontinent, and wiped out an entire pre-existing culture. The pre-existing peoples were the dark-skinned people, and over the course of literally thousands and thousands of years, the whiteness sort of got, what was the phrase that David in Tennessee used the other night? The white folks got some coffee in their cream. But again, cultures wiped out. And that seems to be a hallmark of white folks. We wipe out whatever we run across. And I don't know if there's a genetic thing about that, or if it's just the way we're hardwired. Because we were all dark people once upon a time. And it's only by virtue of that progress northward that the melanin left our systems, because it wasn't really genetically necessary. You know, welcome to evolution. You know, the right-wingers and the fundamentalists and the evangelicals, ain't no such thing as evolution. Dark-skinned people, light-skinned people, that happened as a function of evolution. No, it happened because God placed the curse upon the children of Ham after the ark come to rest on Ararat and that dove didn't fly back no more. Oh, God. Let's go to the phones before I completely lose my mind. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, is that Parson?
Yes, it is.
How you doing, brother? Parson Brown, Topless America Project.
How you doing, Bob?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there.
Good. Yeah, I'm trying to hang in here, too. I was just in West Virginia where they actually, they're missing mountaintops, but they at least still have a summer. So we don't have that in Chicago.
I was talking to one of our buddies, Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, the other day. And he was explaining to me that summer has apparently been canceled for him.
Yeah, I think they just nixed the whole thing this year and didn't even send out the memo.
And, you know, that's one thing. Yeah, you'll always hear right-wingers, Parson. When it comes time to talk about climate change, if it gets real cold in the winter, they'll say, well, thank God for global warming or we'd be even colder. Well, that's not... You know, that's a cold, rainy summer in the upper Midwest. Well, this shows there's no global warming. No, what this shows is that the seasons are getting screwed up. And when the seasons get screwed up, then a lot of things fall in behind that. For instance, and I'm not trying to preach on your nickel, but it's something that has occupied a little bit of my mind lately. Because right now it feels a lot more like early spring than late spring. And if you think of the seasons as a circle that you sort of slide on top of a bigger circle, if your early spring is happening when your late spring, early summer should be happening, what happens to the growing season? Doesn't that mean that the soil doesn't warm to sufficient temperatures to bring the crops in adequately?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that mean that things don't grow the way things ought to grow? And as a consequence, you know, that's the effects of global climate catastrophe. The seasons don't work right. You know, it doesn't matter if you've got 80 degrees, for instance. If you've got 80-degree days on Thanksgiving, I don't care how warm it is, the day is too short to support a growing cycle. So you can't go plant tomatoes in November. Does this make any sense?
Yeah. I can't grow anything where I live.
And that's not just because you live in Chicago.
No, I just can't grow anything.
So it's my understanding that you and some others from there in the Chicago area have been on the road.
Yeah, we have actually been doing a lot in the last week or so. We actually just got back from a delegation consisting of a group of Chicago activists to West Virginia. It was led by a group called the Eco-Justice Collaborative out of Chicago, and we brought a really awesome group of people from different backgrounds. There is a Little Village Environmental Justice Organization, which represents a primarily Latino community in Chicago that actually is trying to shut down power plants in the city, and also an 8th Day Environmental Justice, which is a faith-based group. And we brought all these people to West Virginia to meet with Larry Gibson and to take flyovers and to... The objective was to draw connections between the destruction of Appalachia through mountain job removal and the injustice that's taking place all over the country and, you know, specifically here in Chicago as well, and how we're connected.
And so you all just kind of got in a van and took a road trip?
It really just sort of, it was one of those things that happened out of nowhere. And, you know, I had just started to get a little more involved with the Chicago side of what was going on. We've been working really closely with the Alliance for Appalachia on our project, which is to spread awareness of mountain trap removal. But I stumbled across these awesome people, Lan and Pam Richard, from the Eco-Justice Collaborative in Chicago, who came up to me and asked me if I might be interested. They handed me this flyer all about Coal River Mountain Watch and if I'd ever heard of him. It's like, oh my God, I have to come with you.
Oh, you had the same thing happen to you there in Chicago that had happened to me on the train going through the New River Gorge. You know, I was running my mouth about what's happening to the mountains of West Virginia, and from the back of the lounge car, this lovely young lady just gives me the little victory sign and goes, I know. And we start talking, and she says, well, you know, who are you with? And I said, well, I'm affiliated with Coal River Mountain Watch. She goes, I love those people.
Yes.
So and it's like a little tiny lightning bolt going right through you when that happens, isn't it?
It's nice that you can actually, you can sense that this topic is finally reaching beyond where it's ever been able to reach before. You know, it's actually starting to become something that you can meet a stranger and be able to have some level of basic knowledge about and go from there with. It's not a secret anymore, and that feels really good.
And it feels a little bit like winning, doesn't it?
Slowly does.
We're not there yet by a long shot, and I'm sure you've seen the news today about the Obama administration's announcement. And Parson, I want to take them at their word. I do. But in the short space between January the 20th and June the 11th, I have had my hopes dashed so many times that I'm having a hard time getting real excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you I don't know if you've seen today's article by our good friend Jeff Biggers over at Grist. But he has done another magnificent piece, and it's worth the read. Go over to grist.org, G-R-I-S-T.org. I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Right.
Coalfield residents respond to Obama's announcement on mountaintop removal. He notes that EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson has declared, getting this right is important to coalfield communities that count on a livable environment both during mining and after coal companies move to other sites. Oh, brother. That's the whole point. There's no such thing as a livable environment with mountaintop removal.
Absolutely not. And we can certainly testify to that after this weekend. And it really was, for me, I've been studying and working on mountaintop removal issues for about 3 years now. We're producing a documentary, which will eventually come out as the following of the people involved in this movement. And I've seen a lot of photographs and a lot of footage of mountaintop removal, but I took my first flyover from Charleston via South Wings, which we're so grateful for.
Yeah, it takes about 7 minutes, and you're in a different universe, aren't you?
Absolutely. And, you know, and not to discredit anyone who's ever taken photographs or filmed, we were filming ourselves for our own purposes, and you know, I think I got some okay footage, but there's no way that any lens can really capture the vastness of what mountaintop removal has done. It's not just speckled. It's not just, you know.
And that's the thing. When seen from the air, you can fly over it at 500 feet. You can fly over it at 1,000 feet. And you can fly over it at 40,000 feet, and it still looks like a monumental cancer on the landscape, mainly because that's what it is.
Yeah.
So, what you were with people, Parson, who were learning about what mountaintop removal really, really is.
Yes. Some of them had very little knowledge of what mountaintop removal was until this trip, I believe.
So, you know, you knew, you at least had a foreshadowing of what you were going to see when you stepped aboard the aircraft.
Yeah.
What was it like for the people who had no idea what was about to come at them? I mean, were there gasps in the plane? Were there oh my gods? What was it like?
Absolutely. I mean, we took a total of 4 flights. We had about 11 or 12 people, and South Wings was like able to accommodate all of us. So we took 2 planes at a time in 2 different shifts, and every single person, as you could see them coming off of their flyover, was just, you could see in their face that their change. You something happens to you up there, and there was members of our own crew, and then like I mentioned again, like all of us, like though this was our first flyover, we knew what mountaintop removal was, and I had members of our film crew in tears after their flyover, just even knowing and anticipating and gearing yourself up for what you're about to see, that affirmation is almost too much.
And like I said, I guess the way to describe it is to say you were to a certain degree inoculated. But let me ask, in terms of timing, did you go in the air first, or did you go meet with Larry on Kayford first?
You know, originally we were scheduled to fly over first and then go to Kayford, but it ended up that we went to visit with Larry in the morning and spent a good couple hours there and talking with him and walking all throughout his place, which is impactful enough for one day. But then we all hopped into the cars and rushed to the airport and took our flyover. So we were actually able to look down at the place that we'd been standing, you know, not more than just 3 or 4 hours earlier. And I think that really impacted a lot of the people that we brought, especially some of our new friends from the Little Village Environment Justice Organization and the Eco Justice Collaborative, really being able to draw the connections between devastation and health problems was a very big connector for the issues of communities in Appalachia and communities in urban environments such as the Little Village in Chicago.
Parson, did a sense of personal responsibility attach to the folks who'd never seen it before? Did you get a sense as to whether there was a realization, a light bulb going on, if you will, that that everyone is intimately, that when you flip the switch, you do that, you make more Kaffords. Did that transfer of realization take place?
Yes, I think it definitely did. And one of the individuals that on his own came with us on this delegation was Alderman Joe Moore of the 49th Ward of Chicago. And
so you had a Chicago alderman on this trip.
Yes, we did, and we were thankful to have him. And I think that obviously he was concerned and wanted to come in and learn more about mountaintop removal and the troubles of Appalachia. But it was interesting to see someone who I really don't think that he knew what he was getting into. And from the beginning of the trip to the end of the trip, he could definitely see a difference in the spark in that man's face, and was much more, I think a lot of people really got it. It doesn't take much after you're looking out over Appalachia being completely torn apart. And I think that we're able to draw these connections and try to work together now to say that it's not just the people of Appalachia that are being exploited. There's people, poor people and communities being exploited and oppressed and taken advantage of for the benefit of coal and energy all over the country. And it's time for a major connection and movement.
Well, do you think that movement, as you describe it, has gotten some legs there in Chicago?
I think that Chicago is ready to really stand up for against climate change and to stand up to transition our city into a greener city. Mayor Daley already proclaims us the greenest city and himself the green mayor, yet we have two of the dirtiest coal-fired power plants in the country sort of tucked away in our minority communities.
Oh, of course, just like D.C., the coal-fired power plants in one of the more impoverished, sure.
Yeah, and, you know, they just...
Hey, let's put the poison on top of the poor people.
Yeah. They're still puffing away down there.
Gee whiz. Was this group that went, were they in any way associated with that Coal Olympics movement there in Chicago?
Yes, yeah, that was the Little Village Environmental Justice Organization.
And I take it then from what you described earlier, they're out there flyering and educating and organizing in the community?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. They're doing a great job trying to motivate the people in their communities. And a lot of the same problems occur in Appalachia. You've got people that are resistant and hesitant to stand up because jobs are a major part of that equation. And there is a hold on the people as far as the economies in these areas. In Appalachia, the coal field residents more often than not depend upon coal for their job, and very similar in these neighborhoods in Chicago. The Midwest Generation hires a lot of the residents of these areas.
Well, given that groundswell that's begun, is there a movement toward advocating with your elected representatives, for instance, your Senator Dick Durbin, for whom I have some significant amount of respect, is also a proponent of coal. Is there a move afoot to maybe try to take some meetings with him or his staff and let them know that there's a number of people on the ground there in Illinois who oppose the shameless advocacy of coal?
Well, Topless America has worked to lobby the Illinois representatives for a few years now, and I've met with Senator Dick Durbin as well as most of the Illinois Congress representatives. Durbin is, you know, in most situations very pro-environment and very well-liked in the area. However, he's continue to be a pretty firm supporter of clean coal and the like, which obviously we all know does not really exist. So that's been sort of challenging, and we've continued to keep communication with his office. We've met with his aides as well, but sort of one of many that seem to still be latching on to this myth of clean coal, and I guess they still want it to exist in some fairy.
Or lie of clean coal, as dirty lie, as some of us refer to it, yes.
Yes, yeah, you know, that's what I should have said. Dirty lie, not true, never existed, never will.
You know, purple, yeah, purple. If we've got $10 billion for clean coal in Marky Waxman, then we need $10 billion for purple unicorn research, too.
Yes, that is, I've been meaning to study the purple unicorn situation for a while now.
Well, and I think it needs $10 billion.
If not more.
I think you're right. We need $20 billion for purple unicorn research.
Yes.
You know, you're involved with visual arts and film and things like that. Maybe that's a suitable, not to tell you what to do or anything, but maybe that's a fitting topic for you and the Topless America crew. The push for clean purple unicorn research.
Well, it reminds me of there was an interesting demonstration about a little more than a year ago, where the Dominion Power Company shareholders meeting was at the Guild Museum in Chicago, and we had a demonstration with representatives from Southern Appalachian Mountain Stewards and Appalachian Voices. And there's a photograph, actually. The current exhibit at the Field Museum was Mythic Creatures, and they had pictures of unicorns and giant squids and all sorts of
griffins and leprechauns, yeah. And hillbillies, and yeah.
Yeah, there's actually a picture of me with a sign that says "Clean Coal's Biggest Myth of All." I just thought that was pretty funny.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool.
It resonates true to this day.
So what is let me just run a little bit far afield, Parson. What is the what's the future hold for Topless America?
Well, we are still working to finish up our documentary. We really are coming to a close for production and moving to work out our film. And also we're talking with other organizations about ways to use multimedia to further spread awareness of mountaintop removal. We're talking with Coal River Mountain Watch and Little Village Environmental Justice Organization on how to perhaps through video connect the stories of communities all over the country being affected by coal.
You know, it's a different kind of mining, or extraction. Mining's not the word. Different kind of extraction. But I would love to see you be able to get out to Arizona as well and talk to, and document some of what's going on among the First Peoples out there on Black Mesa, because I know you're aware of that situation as well.
Right. I believe there was a representative from those communities at Lobby Week in
yes.
Arizona, and we had some really great conversations. So that would definitely be an area we would target. Also, there's places in Alaska that also suffer from, if not, oil is also a fossil fuel. They're basically, we're trying to combine the suffering of these communities via fossil fuel and the lack of the visible transition that's taking place in the world. You know, we're trying to unite everybody so that we can make one big firm stance, because we have to have a movement that's unprecedented or else things won't get done. That's what we keep seeing over and over again. Oh, there's not enough of you. The New York Times came and covered an action in Chicago the other day for anti-coal to shut down these power plants. It was the first time that these sorts of organizations have come together in a long time to say no to coal. And the New York Times didn't seem to find it interesting. She said, I keep hearing there's a national movement. Where is it? I'm like, you're watching it happen right here, lady. But she didn't want to write that down.
Yeah, let those who have ears to hear, let them hear. Let those with eyes to see, let them see. And it's amazing the number of people who still don't have ears to hear or eyes to see. Parson, I am so glad to know that you're out there, that the Topless America Project is out there. Tell folks how to find you.
Well, we're toplessamerica.org. If you go to YouTube, you can search Topless America and see our trailer If you want any information, if you want information about what we're doing, where we'll be, if you want to sign up for our email list or anything like that, or if you are so inclined to donate to our cause and our project, you can email info@toplessamerica.org.
Beautiful. Are you MySpacey or Facebooky?
Oh, we MySpace, we Facebook. However, we take a firm stance against Twitter because, honestly, we don't understand what it is yet.
Well, you know what my problem with Twitter is? 40 words. It takes me 40 words to say my name. So that kind of... I'm crippled on Twitter, and I know it.
We haven't even gone there yet. No, it hasn't happened.
I understand. Parson Brown, I always love talking with you, and I hope we will talk again real soon. And
absolutely.
And give my best regards and big old hugs to the whole team, okay?
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Parson. Bye now.
Bye.
Parson Brown, first among equals of the Topless America Project, headquartered in Chicago. I met Parson. I finally got to meet Parson personally during Lobby Week in D.C., and it was an amazing experience. He kind of looked at me and he, Bob, Parson, and no, it wasn't John Marsha running through the waving fields of alfalfa or anything, but it's so good when you can connect with folks that you have pre-existing connections with via this program and via the work of the horn. It's just gratifying. Let's keep rolling here and see what's shaking. Hey, Juanita.
Well, I was respond to some of what Gary was talking about.
Okay.
One thing that made it clear to me, in a way, about some of the beliefs that the supremacists have, is there is such a thing as white man's Bible.
A white man's Bible?
Yeah.
Is that the one with all the love taken out of it and replaced with a whole bunch
of
hate?
No, I don't know. It's, let's see. There's a lot of it on the Internet. It was written by Ben Clausen. I never heard of him. Have you?
No.
It was written by the World Church of the Creator Founder, Ben Clausen. And, so, see, you know, when they talk about the Bible, they're not necessarily talking about the same Bible. Of course, some are. But, I saw an article, and I was going to send it to you, and maybe it's the same one you saw, about the, what you call it, imprecatory prayer?
Yes.
I've been looking that up. I didn't look it up at the time because I thought it was like some of this stuff that Pat Robertson was doing, you know. But this is based mainly on, they call them imprecatory psalms.
Yes, let them be made widows. Let their orphans weep in the streets. Yeah. Yeah. And once again, living proof, I think, of what you say, Juanita, that white man's Bible, where they get off on all the hateful, nasty stuff. Kill them again, Jesus! You know.
It says one thing it says in here about this Bible is that this book has no other purpose than to instill the ideology of genocide and mass murderings of people of color, homosexuals, Jews, and all who choose not to support the beliefs of the WCOTC and the white supremacy movement. This one is exposing it, Citizens Against Hate. It's an Eye on Hate reporting desk is the name of the place. Is the name of the place that's exposing this. But when I found out about 2 or 3 years ago that they had a Bible, their own Bible. And that made me kind of, you know, think, it's like that, where in the world do they get all these things? Now, I know that the Bible is misinterpreted big time. And I know there's a lot of things in there that really looks like, you know, they're going along with that.
Well, and not only, it's not a, the other thing, if you get into the textual criticism angle, Juanita, is that it's not just there's a lot of stuff in there. It's the stuff that's left out. You know, there's no, there is no viable reason for the Gospel of St. Thomas, for instance, not to be alongside Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
Yeah.
And Lord knows it predates John.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, I know that the Catholics have more in their Bible.
Well, among the other things, I think in the Vulgate, if I'm not mistaken, aren't the Old Testament books of the Maccabees in there?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's one. I got a place that has all the different things that are in the Catholic Bible. Is, you know, based on King James version, but I don't think theirs was in King James version. I don't know. But when I want to look up a verse or something, I go to that, and they've got a lot of the different ones. But now I have that Gospel of St. Thomas downloaded.
Right, and fascinating reading, isn't it?
Well, what I've read of it, I have read it all, sorry to say. But I remember I had a Sunday school teacher one time, and she said, "Why is everybody picking on Thomas?" Said, "Doubt is a good thing, you know. They just call him Doubt and Thomas, Doubt and Thomas." Said, "Why don't they call Peter, you know, betraying?"
Yeah, betraying Peter.
Yeah.
Denying Peter.
Yeah, denying Peter. But that is interesting to think about. But anyway, I saw a show that was on, it was on C-SPAN on the book part. C-SPAN 2, it was mm-hmm. on last weekend, or weekend before last, I'm sorry. The man that they fussed about Obama being friends with, and he was like a demonstrator.
Oh, William Ayers.
Yeah, William Ayers. They had him and his wife on there, and they were on like for 3 hours. It was so interesting. Those are interesting people. And he is a teacher mainly. That's his love of his life, his teaching. And he's written a lot of books, too.
Well, see, he's partially responsible for the fact that our school system's been taken over by the socialists.
God help, God, I wish it would be taken over by somebody. You know, the teachers that I had were the ones that went against the curriculum. My best teachers were the ones that went against the curriculum. I had maybe five altogether that they had their own curriculum, and that was it. They didn't care what. And
and you learned stuff.
It really stuck with me.
Absolutely.
Huh?
I said absolutely.
Yeah. The principal of our, elementary was still in sixth grade. You know, sixth grade was still elementary then. And we had our principal, this lady, and she taught us the Roman and Greek mythology. And I remember most of it. And I was really good at it, too.
Yeah, heathen stuff.
And later on, I saw how it applied to life, you know, Achilles' heel and so forth, you know, and just so many writings that apply, you know, and some that I don't know about, and I'm sure that other people know about, and like Shakespeare and so forth. There's a lot of words of wisdom in this world. But I believe truth is truth no matter where it comes from.
I believe you're right.
But anyway, if anybody wants to see it, it's on... They can watch it on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Of what'd you say his name was again?
William Ayers.
Yeah, I just think they're great. I just think I don't know. Maybe something's wrong with me, but I just think they're very terrific people. I mean, they did some bad things, I guess, but anyway, they talk about it.
I can't help but think of this word. Does it seem to you like they have repented and act like forgiven people? You know,
acted like what?
Forgiven people, repented people. You know, that's the whole idea. You repent of your
But you know what? It's like I heard. You've heard of Zig Ziglar, haven't you?
Yes.
Have you ever heard of him?
Yes.
You know, he's supposed to, what you call it, all inspire you.
Right.
And I saw him about 5 years ago on C-SPAN again, and he'd written a book about the bush, and how wonderful he was, and all this blah, blah, blah. He loved to hear him talk. You know, he didn't talk perfect. And somebody brought up something about Clinton, and he said what Clinton did was, he didn't say unforgivable, but
conscionable.
No, it was something like unforgivable. Something like that. But, I mean, I wrote it down the way you said it, and I thought, well, gee, who made you the decider of what is worse?
Exactly.
I looked up, I didn't know that imprecatory prayer is from Psalms.
Yes.
It's on Psalms. There's a bunch of websites on this, too.
And it is, in short, a bunch of baloney.
Well, it's what they want. They, you know, people don't want to know the truth. And how dare them decide that somebody is Brit and all, and is at least doing something, as Obama should die? How dare they? But it's just like they dared about Martin Luther King. Anybody, like I said yesterday about Kate, anybody that wants to help, it wants to do something decent in this world. There's that hatred. And it's, I don't know. I don't think they know what they want. It's just like, wasn't it Garrett was talking about that sooner or later, you know, that people like Rush and Hannity, that's what they want. They want all this stuff to go on. But they don't know. It could very well backfire on them.
They have proven themselves, and I think this is very important. I'm glad you brought it back up, Juanita. They have proven that even in the darkest days, when one dare not say, I am a liberal, except for a few of us.
Oh, yeah.
They proved themselves unable to stamp out the idea of the march forward of human thought and human ideas, which is, in its essence, liberalism.
Oh, sure.
And because of that, and because they know they have lost and are losing, and they, because they know they are dinosaurs, they are now at that point in their philosophical retrograde motion, where they are now willing to resort to the use of deadly force. And the more people that they can incite to murder, the happier they are.
I believe it. I believe that's right. I really do. And they've been working on it quite a while. Old Rush, he's been around quite a while.
He's taken a few rounds on the turnip truck.
Yeah. Him and a bunch of others. And I do want to say something about Sarah Palin. You heard about Letterman, right?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I don't watch TV.
This woman is so persecuted. It got nothing to do with watching him. It's on the news.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's on front page of Yahoo. But I did hear on The View, and I was just so disgusted with The View this morning. It was just absolutely disgusting. Because, now, granted, he made a joke about her daughter, and he thought that the daughter that came to New York with her was the one that had the baby, but it wasn't. It was a 14-year-old girl. So you know what they're making out of that.
Oh, Lord. Not
they're
again.
They're trying to make him out to be a child molester, is what they're doing.
What?
Well, they said a 62-year-old man talking about him raping a 14-year-old girl. Oh, they're up in arms.
David Letterman said he wanted to rape a 14-year-old.
Well, that's where they're interpreting it. It was these jokes. You know, they all make these stupid jokes. And he said it was a stupid joke. He said, I would never say anything like that about a 14-year-old girl. He said, I thought it was the girl that had the baby. But the thing is, what I want to get over is that Sarah Palin is like, no matter what anybody says about her, she is just so persecuted.
Exactly. She's another one of those persecuted Christians.
And she said, oh, I bet they would never do that to somebody else's child. And you know who she's talking about.
Yeah.
Obama's young children. And then the thing about it is, like, I even heard Newt Gingrich one time said that he used to almost cry when he would read the jokes that were made about him. But you know what? And I bet you Agnes can tell you this.
But see, nobody's making jokes about Newt. It's not a joke, Juanita, that he served divorce papers on his wife when she was laying in a hospital bed receiving treatment for cancer. It's not a joke that he was banging his intern like a cheap gong while he was vilifying Bill Clinton for the same thing, not yelling at you.
And then the thing is that these people are so thin-skinned, she's saying that, Letterman doesn't know what it's like in the real world, you know. He's up there, you know, in his... Well, what about her?
Yeah, because she lives in the real world. Excuse me.
She's never worked out in public because if you've ever... And I'm sure Agnes can tell you this. If you ever worked in a medical field, you're going to be insulted left and right every day that you go to work. And you have to take it most of the time because... you know, when you're dealing with human lives, it's a rush deal. And you got people that are naturally cruel, and some of them are impatient. I mean, there's just all kinds of things to contend with when you're around doctors and nurses and little big bosses in the insurance departments and so forth. And you just get insulted all the time, and then you got your head of nurses, you know, if you're in the hospital, they're checking out what you're wearing. If you're wearing something, you can see through it, all that kind of junk. Anyway, this woman is obviously, she hadn't been out where she's had to take criticism. If she thinks she's been persecuted, and I hear other people talk about her being persecuted. Now, I don't agree with, you know, them. I don't like some of the jokes they tell, you know, but they all, these people that are on, you know, like Jay Leno and so forth, they tell some doozies of jokes. And like he said, he was explaining this on Buzz Flash. He was explaining, Letterman was explaining, he said, I've told a lot of jokes that I wish I'd never told. And he said those were bad jokes, but he said he had no intention of doing it toward a 14-year-old girl. And, but see, they've got something to really hold on to now, see. They got a real reason for being, you know, offended.
Yeah.
But they don't mind. That woman went out and told all kinds of stuff about, Obama. And you know, anything, you know. That's okay. Like you said. If you're a Republican, don't dare say anything about you.
Yeah, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican.
And then another thing was that they just went on and on. You know, Elizabeth, what she had to say, because she just adores the woman. And guess who they had on the show?
Who's that?
Scarborough.
Oh.
And Barbara says how much she likes him and all that kind of baloney. Well, I'll tell you who fixed him up last night. John Stewart. Because he showed a clip of him talking about how John Stewart was always saying things about him and about, he said, I think he's just got a Napoleonic complex. And so John Stewart last night, he gets all dressed up as Napoleon and rides his horse. And that's like he's crying. It's supposed to be all of his makeup coming off. these people are so thin-skinned. They don't give a happy what they say about the other people.
No.
But if I got so disgusted, Bob, watching that show this morning. I just really was disgusted, and especially Elizabeth, again.
Well, but that's her job, is to be disgusted,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, but anyway, they... I don't know. Sometimes I just can't take it anymore.
I know. Believe me, I do know the feeling.
But that's our cross in life, I guess.
That's our bear to cross.
Yeah. Okay, well, I will let you go. And oh, boy.
Hang in there, Juanita. Good to talk to you, dear. We'll talk soon.
Okay, you take it easy.
You too. Bye now.
Night-night.
Okay, I've been enlightened during the course of our conversation. It had to do with, you know this. Look, I'm sorry. Maybe to be a good host, I should put in more TV time. And maybe someday I will. But right now, frankly, the budget does not permit the purchase of a television. And frankly, because of where I live and what I know I live with, running more than one seems a bit superfluous. And as a consequence, you know, don't happen. But, you know, Letterman makes the snide, offhanded remark about Sarah Palin and her daughter went to a Yankees game, and Palin's daughter had sex with, got it on with Yankees third baseman Alex Rodriguez. That's not a joke about the Palin girl. That's a joke about Alex Rodriguez. Okay, are we square? Because he has earned a reputation for being a bit of a horn dog. A lot of a horn dog. But, of course, the right wing makes a big hissy out of it. Oh, Jesus, I did that. What a despicable lot they are. Honest to God, what a despicable lot. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me, Bob?
I'm talking to you.
Oh, this is Cindy up here in the Pacific Northwest.
That's what I thought. How you doing, Cindy?
I'm fine, and I love Juanita's new phone. It sounds wonderful, and I have to agree with her about being disgusted with The View. That's why I quit watching it last year. I just can't see waking up in the morning and having that kind of a stomach-churning start to my day, you know? So I just moved on that show. I called in when she was talking about the white man's Bible.
Yeah.
Because I went to I love books, you know that, and I go to these garage sales in the warm months, and while everybody's looking at the lawnmowers and the kids' clothes and stuff, I beeline for the books and see if I can find any old rare books. And I found this one. It's written in 1914, and it's called The Way of Cain, The Handwriting on the Wall, by, and I doubt if he was really a professor, Professor Charles Wesley Waddell. And it's a Ku Klux Klan Bible from the South.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah, and it is filthy. I mean, it's a piece of racist filth. And I have long wondered if I should give it to some museum or something as an example of what kind of harebrained stuff these people publish. And, you know, because this is one of their books that are not supposed to be let outside the organization. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a vanity publisher, and it's very hard to come by. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And inside of it, some idiot left a private personal letter from a so-called a possible family member in, in Clayton, Georgia. This book came to our state from Clayton, Georgia, and in the letter they discussed their friends in Arkansas and Mississippi and Georgia, and it seems like they use a first name and then a vegetable to name the second person. What it is a discussion about their claverns and when the next get-together is and what they're going to do, you know. And it is disgusting. It's a white man's Bible for the Klan, and 459 pages long. It's unbelievable.
And I imagine that there's tons of that stuff out there.
I have no idea, but I would like to, you know, I'd like to somehow offer this up as a learning tool to the world. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But it's a very fine line. Do you offer it up as a learning tool and incite other wackos?
My initial just gut reaction to that, Cindy, is no, you don't. You let hateful crap like that die.
And I have thought about relegating it to the fire because that's what it is, but it's a piece of American history.
What I would do, because we never know what will befall us, I would make sure and add. I'd just get a little piece of stationery out, and I'd write down who I am, where I found it, and why I got it, what it is, and disavow any of the information in it, lest anyone should be going through your things at some later date and think, God, I never knew she was like this.
Oh, yeah, I've thought of that, too. I thought, oh, my God, you know, it's kind of like going to the doctor's office with dirty underwear or something, you know? I mean, don't leave something like this in your bedroom behind, right? You don't want anyone to think you're like that.
No.
No, it's really awful. I consider hatred and racism to be pornographic.
It is pornographic.
And, you know, to me, to show, old books on people's studies of sexuality, to me, that's not pornographic. That's just, you know, people's learning about sexuality. But when a whole book is written all about how, you know, people shouldn't intermingle with this race of people, that it makes a study of all these different races of people and then links them all back to that one Negro person who's depicted as a pickaninny. You know, those old pickaninny pictures they used to have? Those horrifying pictures. And I would just, you know, I wish there was some way to give this thing to the great big, I wish that I could find a great big guy that was like Muhammad Ali of the old days, the big, strong, healthy Muhammad Ali of the 60s, and give this to him and say, go find that man, Mr. Waddell, and teach him what for writing this thing, you know?
Yeah.
This old guy's probably been pushing up daisies for 75 years.
Mercifully, yes.
But it's a horrifying book, and this copy is not that old, Bob. This copy is not 100 years old. It's paperback. It's cheaply bound so that, you know, they could run off a lot of copies. It's vanity print. And the publishing house will not name themselves in it.
Oh, of course not.
It just has order from H.A. Myers, and it gives his address where to order it. And the author calls himself the author. Isn't that nice?
Yes. But that's also a function of the style of that era. Your humble author, gentle reader, would like you to know that blah. And then, in this case, a vile torrent of poisonous filth emanates forth.
The book itself is it's bound and printed to look like a Bible, but it's white instead of, you know, we're used to seeing.
Well, of course it is.
You know, all the pages are white and the cover is white and everything, you know, And it's bound to look like, it's bound up to look like a Bible, so you could carry it to church and it looked like something that they take on Easter Sunday when you take your white Bible instead of your black one to church, so it matches your Easter dress. Yeah.
Never having had an Easter dress, I wouldn't be conversant with it, but I will take your word for it.
Well, I'm sure Juanita can tell you about that. Cause
oh, I know, I know. I saw plenty of that growing up as a little fundy. You know, we've gotten...
You know,
go ahead.
You know what, when I was a little fundy And my folks used to drop us off at church on Sunday morning so that they could go home and have a couple hours alone while we were stuck in the Sunday school.
So, and they were praying. They were praying because y'all were noisy children, and they just wanted to pray quietly without you. Right.
Yeah, right, right. We only lived about 1 mile from the church, so it wasn't real hard to go dump us off for that free babysitting and go home and be alone for a while. So my older brother and I pretty well put two and two together and figured out what it was all about. They wanted time out from the kids to be alone, and we wanted time out from the younger kids, so that was great for us. We got away from the younger ones. And we used to stand there in the foyer of the Sunday school and wait till the folks drove off. And as soon as they went around the corner and disappeared, we'd walk outside, go down around the corner to the candy store and buy candy with the money they gave us for the church till. And then we'd walk down to the beach and take off our clothes. And underneath, we had our bathing suits on and go swimming in the ocean. You know?
That sounds like a lot more viable worship than anything that was going on in that church.
Yeah, then we'd watch the time, and we'd beat it back up to the church, put our clothes back on, and I don't know how we got by with it with wet bathing suits underneath our clothes, but we somehow, I guess our folks didn't look at us very closely.
Or maybe they knew and they didn't care as long as they still got their alone time.
Yeah, that could have been it, too. But we got to have a little sack of candy in the day at the beach, you know. That was my upbringing in the church.
Hey, Cindy, good to hear from you, dear. And, put a note in that book just so nobody will think that you were approved of it. But I wouldn't, place it with a museum because we learned yesterday, even with the Holocaust Museum, there were references to it on the right, on the hard right wing blogs, websites and so forth about how that mythical museum of hate for white people.
Yeah,
that's how they referred to the Holocaust Museum. Really?
Yeah, this thing puts the lie to that that meme that they stick out there that they really don't think like this. You know what I mean?
No, they really, really do think like that.
Yeah, they really, really do, and it's unbelievable. I'll write that letter and put it in there.
For safety's sake. Forewarned is forearmed.
Yeah. Okay, Bob. Nice calling in.
Oh, nice to hear from you, Cindy. Always good to hear from you, dear.
Yeah, likewise.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Bob.
Bye. From the Great Northwest, our pal, Cindy. And you never know what... I'm not much of a yard saler or flea marketeer. I probably ought to be, because you never know what little gems are going to crop up like that. And like Cindy says, you know, while everybody else is looking for a bargain on a pair of pants or something like that, she goes over and thumbs through the books, and whew, the stuff that's there, oh, my heavens. Some are gems, and some are classics of hate and derogatory filth, like what she found. And you know what? I'm glad Cindy found it, because that means that somebody else didn't to potentially be poisoned by that venom. Wow, just amazing. So we've been going at it for quite some time now without a break. And it is Thursday night, you know. And that means it's a Green News Report night, and I don't want to get through the program without hearing from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, because I like the work that they do. So that's on the way. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head-on. Direct dial if you've got your own long-distance calling plan, or you can do it without it costing you any money. 304-658-3333. Email bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's all that easy. We'll be back.
Yeah. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, June 11, 2009.
It's official. It's a pandemic.
Can I panic?
Obama doubles down on mountaintop removal.
Terrific.
Plus, green jobs bringing in the green.
Ain't bringing me any green. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Okay, a lot of breaking news today. Desi Doyen, what do you got?
The World Health Organization today declared the H1N1 swine flu virus an official global pandemic today for the first time since 1968. Confirmed cases around the world now total nearly 30,000 with 144 deaths. The announcement was expected and is a formal trigger for governments to take specific actions to monitor and contain the virus.
Now, the big panic happened a few weeks ago and it was wall-to-wall on the cable news, pandemic, everybody run for the hills. Haven't seen much about it today.
No, we haven't. Now, the WHO chief does describe the virus as, quote, moderate, and stresses that the majority of cases are mild and require no treatment, but a surge in new infections could overwhelm medical services, especially in poorer countries.
And pandemic doesn't so much mean it shows up in many places. It doesn't necessarily mean it's taking down the world.
Right. Now, the last pandemic in 1968 killed a million people, and the flu season normally kills about between 250,000 and 500,000 people every single year. Now, they were saying that they delayed this announcement back in May because some countries asked the WHO to not make this announcement out of fear for social and economic turmoil from overreacting. The panic is already happening in Argentina, where apparently people overwhelmed emergency services and nearly brought down emergency services in Buenos Aires.
I can't believe we're letting Argentina beat us in the panic business. We ought to be the overreactors around here. What do they think they
have? In the United States, we've had 13,000 confirmed cases and at least 27 deaths. The Obama administration today announced so-called new approaches to mountaintop removal, the incredibly destructive coal mining technique. Early reaction from environmental groups is unimpressed. Instead of making mountaintop removal illegal under the Clean Water Act, the administration essentially has said it will do a better job of enforcing regulations already on the books.
Why are they doing this? Why are they not rolling back what the Bush administration did on this mountaintop removal stuff?
That's a good question. It seems to be part of negotiations for the Waxman-Markey Climate and Energy Bill. Coal state legislatures have vowed to halt the legislation.
Yeah, negotiations with Democrats because the Republicans already said they are going to block it. They'll let it get through the House, but they ain't going to let it get through the Senate, as we talked about in our last show.
But hey, you know, actually enforcing law could be considered an improvement. World governments are meeting in Bonn, Germany this week for interim negotiations prior to the biggest meeting to finalize climate treaty negotiations in Copenhagen in December. And now China this week announced ambitious new investment in renewable energy and emissions technology. The development minister told The Guardian UK that China will be moving up its targets for renewable energy that exceed U.S. commitments currently being negotiated in Congress. Europe is the leader in renewable energy, and the officials say they believe China can easily match Europe by 2020, with the Chinese government pushing for a 75-fold expansion of their renewable energy market.
Does America, U.S., have any... Are we competing in any way with these with Europe and China here?
No, actually, we're behind Europe in our current deployment of renewable energy technologies, but China promises to surpass us. More new green-collar jobs were created in the U.S. than in traditional sectors of the economy, according to a new study from the Pew Charitable Trusts this week. Between 2003 and 2007, essentially during the Bush administration, before the economic downturn, the emerging clean energy tech economy created twice as many jobs in energy sectors like wind and solar than in traditional sectors. Now, the Pew study is the first to provide hard evidence of job creation, although the data gathering was completed before the recession began. The time that was studied was at a time of little to no government support during the Bush administration, unlike today. And Pew says clean energy is a sector poised for explosive growth.
Combine that with the study we reported on a couple of days ago showing that the green initiatives that the Democrats, Obama, are trying to push forward will actually, what, save money for Americans?
Yes, that the congressional budget estimates say that it will actually be a net gain for the federal budget to implement these clean energy technologies. The collapse of the government in Zimbabwe affects more than just its citizens. The global recession and also this political unrest in Zimbabwe has led to a resurgence in poaching and the decimation of what's left of the world's population of endangered white rhinos. The rhino's horn is prized in China for medicinal purposes and can sell for tens of thousands of dollars on the black market. 120 rhinos have been killed in the last year alone, and conservation groups estimate that there may be as few as 400 black and white rhinos left in the country. And they say that within the next 2 years, the species could simply become extinct. And a recent innovation in applied solar technologies. Now, instead of solar panels, how about solar shingles? Currently in development, flexible thin-film solar panels are embedded with photovoltaic circuitry. They're durable, yet also flexible, like 35-millimeter film, and they're cut in the shape of rooftop shingles.
Cool. Can you put them on your existing shingles, or you replace your
roof? I think you'd replace your roof with these. I'm not exactly sure. They're still in development. The inventors say this should be less expensive to install, way easier to replace than traditional rooftop solar panels, and should make use of all available space and could apply to all kinds of different buildings.
Sweet. Free energy. Get off the grid. Be the grid. All right. Check out more on that at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I need a producer. I kind of forgot I had that one loaded. Nah, this is the last 24 minutes of the program. And going to try to hit some high points, as it were, just to do a little house cleaning on the way out for this Thursday evening edition. Hate to leave things unsaid, unreported, unmentioned, undone, loose strings hanging, that kind of thing. I hate that. That just did. Because I guess I've got a little bit of obsessive-compulsiveness playing around inside my brain. A quick look at the mailbag. With regard to Cindy's previous call, our pal Jay writes in and says, I'd think Cindy's Bible would have value as a collectible and could be auctioned off, the proceeds going to a minority scholarship fund or something similar. And I understand the sentiment behind that, but Jay, I got to tell you, I disagree. Not disagreeing to be disagreeable, just disagree because... And this is a tough one. This is a tough one for me to. I don't know. Maybe I don't disagree. Maybe that is the best use of it. But I don't even like. On the one hand, I don't even like having that kind of. It's like having loaded guns out there. Just available, because this is a loaded gun.
This is a cry of fire in a crowded theater, this kind of stuff. I have a moral repugnance for book burning. And at the same time, on the other end of that spectrum, there's the concern that if we were to get rid of all of this, then the deniers would just say, well, where's the evidence we was ever hateful? We never said nothing of the kind. We're just peaceful, God-fearing American white people. Huh? So, in a way, I kind of like my idea of Cindy just hanging on to it, and if the day ever arises, then again, there's the ambitious project of scanning it in and just putting it on a server for perpetuity with limited access to, you know, just as a sort of an archive. I don't know. I don't know. Then again, I'm not in the answer business, but you know that. Just a quick update to something that began the program. As an example of how the for-profit media do not serve the people, you will recall that at the beginning of the program, the number one story at CNN.com was Friends Remember Slain Victim as Gentle Giant with regard to the gentleman who was slaughtered yesterday in D.C. by that man who was obviously motivated by the hateful right wing. That was story number one. Story number two was Chastity Bono changing gender spokesman says. Well, Chastity Bono changing gender spokesman says has risen to number one at CNN.com. Want to guess what is the number two story behind that? Mm-hmm. Army suicide rate on record pace. Army suicide rate on record pace. It can't even make the top story at CNN.com because Chastity Bono changing gender is what America really wants to know about. Oh, I hate celebrity culture. I hate it. The story that's not number one, a CNN story, the suicide rate among U.S. Army soldiers jumped in May, continuing a four-month upward trend on a record pace for a second straight year. In the last month, 17 soldiers were either confirmed or suspected to be suicides, up from 13 in April, 13 in March. The Army said the total number of potential or confirmed suicides since January stands at 82. Last year, the Army recorded 133. It will be a banner year for suicide in the U.S. Army. And the story notes something that I mentioned on this program a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks. Last month, Fort Campbell, Kentucky, the very home of the 101st Airborne Division, the motto, Death from Above, shut the base down. Fort Campbell was shut down on a 3-day suicide stand-down training event. They've had them twice this year. People scratching, you know, the Army brass standing around scratching their little heads, going, I wonder why this is happening. What we need is a good George Patton to go through and slap a few suicides around. That's what. In a massive understatement, the CNN article says units of the 101st have deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan several times since the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks on the United States. Oh, nice job linking the two there, CNN. Why don't you just... Oh, Jesus, this is why I hate the for-profit media. And have experienced a good deal of combat. A good deal of combat
come on down to Uncle Sam's House of Horrors and get a good deal on combat. I don't think CNN could afford me, even if I offered to be an editor for them. A good deal of combat? Jesus Christ. But, you know, that's the for-profit media for you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of the horn. Thank you for rejecting that kind of dreck. Good deal of combat. Jiminy. Regarding Sarah Palin and the attempt to smear David Letterman, David, our buddy in South Carolina, says, yes, big bad Sarah Palin going to protect us all from the big mean terror. Sorry, David. Sorry I screwed up your email. Yes, big bad Sarah Palin going to protect us from the big mean terrorists, but can't handle David Letterman. Amen. And this from horn psychotherapist and host of Rick's Place, Rick Goodner. I like this. Subject line, we are winning. Rick says, we are getting the word out, and sends me a smile. He said, I found this at Huffington Post. This is a quote. Regarding right-wingers shooting and murdering people and the equivalence of, well, they say mean things about, look at all the mean things they said about George Bush. You've heard that equation, that false equation. The one that would have an equal, if it was mathematical, it would have an equal sign with a slash through it. Does not equal. Someone commented at Huffington Post, and Rick copied it and sent it along. Quote, there is no moral equivalency here. I'm an independent who is seriously considering never voting Republican again. You cannot compare your two lists. Apparently someone had made a list of supposedly hateful right-wingers and hateful left-wingers. You cannot compare your two lists and say the hate talk and vilifying is equal. You can say whatever you want, but this independent sees the reality far differently. When is the last time a lib shot and killed someone in an act of domestic terrorism? Why is it that every time we have a Democratic president in my lifetime, political violence increases? I am so done with Republicans who refuse to be honest with themselves about the damage their party is doing to this country. You see things like that, and you get a little bit inspired. You think, yeah, we're making a difference. But you also have to take into account, for I mentioned earlier the announcement from the Obama administration today that they're going to do a better job at enforcing the law on mountaintop removal, by gum. You betcha, by Jiminy. We're going to enforce that law. Well, I do need to let you know that last night, yesterday evening, before this morning's announcement, my congressman, Nick Rahal, had a nice little sit-down chat with Lisa Jackson, the administrator of the EPA. And then this morning they come out and they say, oh, we're going to do a better job at enforcing the law. Really? If you're going to do a better job at enforcing the law is clear that mountaintop removal is illegal. You'd like to think that this is one of those Obama-Wan Kenobi Jedi mind tricks. Is it? I am suspicious, to say the least. And I would echo the words of Goldman Prize winner and our dear friend Judy Bonds. Jeff Biggers, our friend, whom you've heard on this program, contacted Judy to see what she thought, speaking for Cold River Mountain Watch, to see what she thought about the Obama administration's announcement. And you know what? Judy Bonds could not equivocate. Judy Bonds could not political speak if her life depended on it. All Judy Bonds knows how to do is talk truth and speak to the facts. So there's no weasel words in this. Judy don't do weasel. She said the Obama administration's announcement is pure political subterfuge. Scrutiny is another term for smoke and mirrors. Obama's new motto is, yes, we can blow up Appalachia. How will Obama fix the problems that the residents must deal with? I'm truly disappointed in President Obama's bait-and-switch campaign lies. Obama says he wants to protect streams, but a mountaintop removal permit is filling in streams. I challenge President Obama to bring his family and come to West Virginia and live near the blasting and breathe poison air and drink poison water that we mountaineers are forced to live with. You know now why I say about Coal River Mountain, watch what I say. They don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk. Kind and decent people, and they would gladly squire President Obama about the Coal River Valley and let him see firsthand. But you see, it's like that old CIA concept of plausible deniability. As long as he never stands on anybody's back porch and watches and watches the rain of toxins and dust and aerosolized ammonium nitrate and diesel fuel and molecularized sandstone, silica dust, boil down across someone's property and into their lungs and those of their children, well, he can say, well, you know, we're going to enforce the law. The enforcement of the law would mean the end of mountaintop removal. Period. Nothing but. No way around it. So just bear that in mind. Oh, by the way, with regard to yesterday's shooting at the Holocaust Museum, James von Brunn has friends in the white supremacist movement. According to a reportage from the Washington Post, they quote John DeNugent. He is what's called a white separatist. He told the Washington Post that von Brunn had been running a little paranoid recently that somebody in Washington had cut his Social Security after looking at his website. And then DeNugent described himself as a responsible white separatist member. This from the Washington Post article. DeNugent called von Brunn a genius, but described the shooting as the act of, quote, a loner and a hothead. The responsible white separatist community condemns this. It makes us look bad. No, dumbass. Being a white separatist makes you look bad. Oh, my God. The responsible white separatist community. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, DeNugent is a frequent contributor to virulently anti-Semitic and racist online forums. He's so racist, he even got banned from Stormfront because a moderator asked him to tone down the implied threats of violence in his posts. He threatened to kill a Stormfront moderator. Ladies and gentlemen, the responsible white separatist community. Feel better now? Good. Glad you did. And by the way, a little golf clap to Joan Walsh. Last night, I repeatedly inquired who is out there on the for-profit media making it plain that the right wing is at war with us, and that they are killing us, and that they are being implored to kill us by people like Limbaugh and Hannity, Savage and O'Reilly, Liddy et al. And it is my understanding that Joan Walsh did exactly that. And so, you know, big shout out to her. She appeared on the on television on Chris Matthews' Hardball last night. It's worth giving a listen.
We're back with Salon.com's Joan Walsh and USA Today's Susan Page. Thank you, ladies, for this. I want you on because there's some news developing tonight. It just broke. We've got a New York Daily News story, which will run in tomorrow's paper. We got a copy of it right now. This is the ex-wife of the racist Von Braun who did the shooting and killing today. She describes him as an abusive alcoholic whose hatred against Jews and blacks, quote, ate him alive like a cancer. It was all he would talk about, she said. When I questioned him, he would get very angry and abusive. She asked her name about because he used to make the statement that he was going to go out with his boots on. I took it to mean that he wasn't just going to lay down and die of old age, that he was going to go out and try to take some people with him. He would talk about what the world would become in 20 or 30 years, that most of the country would be governed by black governors, and that the Jewish people owned the media. That's why I divorced him, because he was eaten alive with a cancer with this matter. Joan Walsh, this is a political action today by a far-right extremist. I just wonder what's in the water, what's in the air as we speak.
Well, I wonder, too, especially in the wake of the murder of Dr. George Tiller, who performed abortions, and another really unhinged right-wing nut job. And I want to be very careful here, Chris. The only people responsible are the people...
Oops. Right-wing nut job. And there we go. Straight into the straight down the meme. He was sane. Roeder was sane. Von Braun is sane. And they are, what they are, is weaponized right-wingers.
Who pulled the triggers? Unless we find out that these guys had help, that might be a different story. But from what we know now, the people responsible are the killers. However, I don't think you can deny that there is a rising climate of right-wing hate, a lot of it directed at Obama. You and I go way back to the beginning of the campaign, and the level of craziness, he's a secret Muslim, he hates America, he wasn't born here. Now, this guy, Von Braun, he was one of the birthers. He didn't believe in Obama's birth certificate, and he was constantly online agitating about that. There is a very disturbing and disturbed element of political discourse, and I would throw in Rush Limbaugh, not blaming him, but when you say that our president is more dangerous than...
Blame him, Joan. Blame him. Make him take ownership of it.
Al-Qaeda, you've gone off into crazy nut job land. You are off the charts crazy, and you are whipping people up. If he's worse than our mortal enemy, Al-Qaeda, who killed thousands and thousands of Americans, I don't know. Where do you go after that? It's awful.
Let me go to Susan to check that. In terms of, if you're a...
And that's about as close to honest criticism of the right-wing hate machine as you're going to get in the for-profit media. That's it. And that's it also for the show tonight. Thank you for joining in. Nice crowds. Nice crowds in the chat room the last couple of nights. Keep it up, gang. I like to have company during the show so I can see what you're thinking during the course of the program. I just love that. Headonradionetwork.com/chatroom if you've never been there. Can't fully explain the uptick in chat room attendance in the last few days, but it's awfully good to see you there. It really, really is. Try it out sometime if you never have. You'll enjoy it. Thanks to everyone who contributes to help keeping the horn going, whether that is financial or idea-based, chat, email, phone calls. Great to hear from Gary again tonight. That was wonderful. If you haven't called in a while, check in. Some one of these evenings. Honest to God, we fret and we worry, Agnes and I. I can only say what is the absolute truth, and that is we are nearing the midway part of June, and we aren't anywhere near keeping us on the air for July. And we are down to that. And it's so frustrating because we got all this planned for August. The greatest opportunity to expose people to what the horn can do that we've ever had. And we're struggling to get there. If you can help, please help. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. And there's also a snail mail address. We'd be mighty obliged if you'd help us keep this little experiment in another way to do media alive. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, who continues to help as they can help in the midst of their own struggle. They are the bravest, hardest working people I know. And they're fact-based and fierce in their advocacy for our present and our future. Thank you. Be with us tomorrow night. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
Five, four, three.